May I please the court? I am Bill Paddock. I am here on behalf of the appellants. I first want to bring to the court's attention an error in the addendum to the appellant's opening brief. In our brief, we cite to section 3792.103 subsection 2, which is the definition of the abandonment of an absolute water right. However, in the addendum, we included 3792.103 subsection 1, which is the definition for abandonment of a conditional water right. I have advised counsel for the appellees of this error, and I will file a supplemental statement of authority to correct that. Today, what I would like to do is discuss really what this lawsuit is about and what the appellees hope to accomplish. I want to focus on the important distinction between contract water rights and water rights acquired by appropriation. It is that distinction which I believe led to the trial court's error interpreting paragraph 7 of the 1990 agreement. And in turn, I believe it's the mistaken interpretation of paragraph 7 of the 1990 agreement that caused the trial court to violate the fundamental rules of contract construction that require it to give effect to all of the provisions of the contract, to render them harmonious, and to give effect to each. And that manifestly was not accomplished by the trial court when it construed the 1990 agreement here. I will reserve the remainder of my arguments and rely on the briefs for them. What this case is about at its root is two things. The appellees do not like paying the rates the Colorado Springs charges out of city customers for water, so they want to find a way to have lower water prices. The other thing it's about is that the current owner of the Cascade Public Service Company wants to sell to someone else other than the Cascade.
Counsel, how are your opponent's motivations relevant to any of the issues you've raised on appeal?
They are relevant to the interpretation of the contract, and I believe the trial court's interpretation of the contract.
But your argument is the contract is unambiguous.
That's correct.
If it's unambiguous, we don't go beyond the contract.
That's fine. Turning then to the contract, Your Honor, the contract the 1990 was entered into to provide a water supply for the Cascade Metropolitan District, and as the facts demonstrate, that contract was entered into as a result of negotiations and proceedings before the Public Utilities Commission that required the Cascade Metropolitan District and Cascade Public Service Company to provide treated water to their customers. The contract itself is the provision under which the water is provided. Now, the important distinction that we need to deal with is the difference between appropriative water rights and contract water rights. Appropriative water rights are water rights that are obtained pursuant to Article 16, Section 6 of the Colorado Constitution, where someone goes out and diverts water from the stream and obtains an enforceable priority to continue to divert that water and apply it to beneficial use. An example of this type of water right are the senior Harms Ditch water rights owned by the Cascade Town Company and the water rights owned by the City of Colorado Springs. The second type of contract, or second type of water right involved, is a contract water right. A contract water right is basically like any other contract water right. It is the right to receive water pursuant to the terms of a contract. And here we are dealing with two contract water rights: the original contract water right that arose under the 1934 agreement, and which was superseded by the 1990 agreement, in which a different contract water right was provided. It is the appellant's view that the district court did not understand this fundamental difference between a contract water right and an appropriative water right. If one looks at the court's opinion, the district court's opinion, it refers to the 1934 contract as a water right appropriated through the 1934 contract and treats it as an appropriative water right that somehow exists independent of the underlying contract which gave it birth. trial court said nothing in the turning to paragraph 7, then the trial court effectively gave that contract water right some type of existence that appeared to be independent of the 1934 agreement. And he said that, turning to paragraph 7, then he said the paragraph 7 of the contract was a protection of that contract water right that prevented it from being impacted in any way by the termination of the 1990 agreement.
Isn't that water right, whatever you want to call it, significantly impacted if Cascade were to default under the terms of this contract?
If Cascade defaults under the terms of the contract, then the City of Colorado Springs can terminate all services and is entitled to ownership of the priority water rights. There was not an independent contract water right, but Colorado Springs, under the default provisions, particularly 11B3 of the contract, is entitled to terminate all services and does not have an obligation to resume delivering water to the Cascade Metropolitan District or Cascade Public Service unless it chooses to do so. That sort of highlights the error of the trial court's ruling, because the trial court ruled that the 0.4 CFS contract water rights survived any termination of the 1990 agreement. If it could survive termination of the 1990 agreement, then it renders completely ineffectual the provisions of paragraph 11B3 when there is a default by the Metropolitan District or the public service company. It would simply mean that in the event of default, then we would go back to the 1934 agreement, and the City of Colorado Springs would have to continue to supply a free water supply to this entity. And that completely vitiates the effect of paragraph 11B3. The same is true for paragraph 13 of the contract, and that is that when the City of Colorado Springs is in default, under that provision of the contract, if the city is in default and the public service company declares a default, then the contract specifically provides that the city must resume making bypass flow obligations in the stream on Cascade Creek of the type required under the 1934 agreement, and must deliver untreated water through its old pipeline to the Cascade Metropolitan District. Now, if the contract right under the 1934 agreement continued to exist, those provisions become meaningless, because there would be a continuing obligation by the City of Colorado Springs to deliver 0.4 CFS of water with or without default and with or without the existence of the 1990 agreement. So in my view, that illustrates the fundamental error of the district court in its interpretation of the agreement and interpretation of the 1934 contract as creating some type of right that superseded or continued to exist after the termination of the 1990.
The trial court's ruling essentially as rendering superfluous those default provisions?
Render superfluous the default provisions, and it also renders meaningless the provisions of paragraph 12, which say that the 1934 contract is superseded by the 1990 contract. The court basically ruled that whatever the nature of this contract right that was created in 1934 was unaffected by the provisions of the 1990 agreement should it be terminated. Those rights remained. So it is correct, it renders ineffectual both of the default provisions in paragraph 11B3 and in paragraph 13. And I think that the error by the trial court stems from its reading of paragraph 7. The end of paragraph 7, it recites that nothing in this agreement, nothing in this paragraph will diminish the contractual water rights or other water rights of the Cascade Town Company. But I read that as a limited savings clause, which applies only to paragraph 7. However, the trial court read it more broadly as applying to the entire agreement. For example, if you look at paragraph 6 of the agreement, there the parties relieve Colorado Springs of a bypass flow obligation that exists in water rights decrees. The appellees argued that that provision would come back into effect if the 1990 contract were terminated. The trial court said no. If you'd wanted to make sure that it survived the termination of the agreement, you should have put that in paragraph 7. And paragraph 7 is the paragraph that the court construed as an overall, overarching savings clause that applied to the entire agreement, not simply to the technical provisions for water service in paragraph number 7.
There's a lot of discussion in your briefs about the meaning of the word supersedes.
Yes, Your Honor.
And I think there's dictionary definitions that appear to support both sides of the argument. You agree with that?
Well, I don't agree with that. I think that you can read old definitions of Black Law Dictionary more broadly, but I think if you go to the cases that were relied on in Black's Law Dictionary to as citations of authority for those definitions, you'll find that all the cases that were cited by Blacks do not support the definition that supersede can mean suspend or stay. As far as we could tell, the supersede meaning suspend or stay came from a citation to the what they call the Century Dictionary, which was a turn of the century dictionary cited in a New York Court of Appeals case. But as far as our research has disclosed, since that time and since at least the 7th edition of Black's Law Dictionary, the that suspend or stay alternative definition for supersede has not been there. And I also believe that it conflicts with the established law of this jurisdiction when construing statutes and contracts, that supersede means to take the place of, render void, or replace. I would like to reserve the remainder of my time. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Eric Bentley for Appellees, for bar number 33792. For simplicity's sake, I'm going to be referring to Appellees and their predecessors simply as the District or the Water District. The city's reading of the 1990 agreement cannot mean what they say it means. I'm going to give you five reasons from all of them on the face of the 1990 agreement why it cannot. But before I do, I'd like to briefly address the issue that Judge Casebolt raised about the meaning of supersede. It's not very complicated what the parties meant by supersede in this contract. It meant exactly what the trial court found that it meant, which was that the parties wanted to operate under one agreement. They didn't have to be referring back to an older agreement in order to figure out what their rights and obligations were. It was for administrative convenience. It wasn't intended by that one sentence to completely annul and void the 1934 agreement and everything in it. And as I said, I'll spend the remainder of my argument explaining why we believe that it can't be read that way. But as far as supersede, I want to make one other point, goes to the dictionary and the case law definitions. You can come out our way with respect to supersede in two different ways. The first is the way that the trial court did, which is to rely on the suspend or stay, which were definitions that were in Blacks at the time that the parties negotiated and executed the agreement. And they could have referred to Blacks and relied on those definitions, regardless of whether they had done the complex additional research that Mr. Paddock did into why Blacks gave those definitions. But you could also, even if you go with some of Mr. Paddock's definitions, you can come out our way. Obviously, we reject the definitions of a null or void, and as I said, I'm going to spend most of my argument on that issue. But as Mr. Paddock said in his brief and just now, supersede also means replace or take the place of. And really, from a common sense perspective, what these parties intended through this sentence was that they wanted the later agreement to replace or take the place of the earlier one for the life of the later agreement. Not permanently, And I'll return to that. But for the life of the later agreement, which was a limited term agreement, it says repeatedly throughout that it applies for a limited term. So as long as the later agreement was in place, they wanted to be able to refer to the later agreement.
And so I'm sorry to interrupt you.
Yes.
Point me to a sentence in the contract that says the 1990 agreement is for a limited term.
Yes, I can point you to more than one, Your Honor.
All right.
And I believe I'm looking at pages 12 and following in the record, which is where the 1990 contract is, starting with paragraph 7, which I think is the key paragraph. About 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, about 7 lines down in paragraph 7, quote, CTC shall not exercise any water right priority on the stream as long as this agreement is in effect. And it keeps going. And on the top of the next page, CTC agrees to subordinate its rights to the rights of Colorado Springs, as long as this agreement remains in effect. That was an issue of controversy at the beginning of the case because the city initially took the position that this was a permanent contract and the district could not walk away without defaulting. They later confessed that position when they were confronted with letters in their files in which they had confessed it.
Maybe I misunderstood you, but I understood your argument to be that that there is a term for this agreement, a length of time that this agreement remains in effect, and that the 1934 agreement comes back into effect after this terminates.
Let me try again, Your Honor. I'll try and get it out better this time. So it's undisputed and confessed by the city that the agreement is terminable at will, and in the 1990 agreement, both parties address the fact that at some point the agreement will no longer remain in effect through those phrases I read, that a party can walk away.
That's true for every contract. Once a party defaults on the contract, it can be terminated. I mean, so that doesn't make it a limited term contract just because a default or an opt-out clause may allow a party to walk away from it. That doesn't make it a limited term contract.
Well, Nate, what I need to say, Your Honor, and this is an important point issue here, is this is terminable at will. The city wanted to treat it as if it was not, and eventually it confessed that it was terminable at will. And what that means is either party can walk away without default or breach, without penalty. That either and this is confessed and now is undisputed.
Neither party has to, and as long as neither party does and there's no default, the contract continues indefinitely.
It could. It could, yes, until a party walks away. It's important that either party can, because either party on a terminable at will contract can walk away and has the right to return to its pre-contract position. The city is trying to prevent the district from doing that. The district wants to return to its pre-1990 agreement position. The city wants to penalize the district heavily for doing that. It wants to take away this 0.4 CFS right, which is an extremely valuable right, and a right that's been a vested property right for more than 75 years. So it is refusing to treat it as a terminable at will contract, and instead it wants to treat the district's walking away as if it were a default. And it wants to penalize it and impose almost as many penalties that functionally are very similar to the default provisions of the contract.
Well, if Cascade were to default, and I'm sorry I'm using the term Cascade to encompass all the
entities. That's okay.
If Cascade were to default, paragraph B, 11B specifically says that the city gets its water rights.
Yes.
So if Cascade doesn't default, the city doesn't get its water rights.
Yes, but what the city is trying, under the city's interpretation, if Cascade voluntarily walks away, the city gets arguably the most valuable water right of Cascade, which is this 0.4 right.
It was a contractual right, not a decreed right.
Agreed. We agree that this is a contractual right. We agree it was conferred, it was conveyed in 1934 through the 34 agreement. We think this whole argument hinges entirely on whether this one sentence that they rely on made the 1934 agreement void, made it just go poof. And if I may, I wanted to return to, I wanted to give you five reasons from the face of the contract why that can't have been the intent of the parties. When the district walks away, that 34 agreement, it returns to its pre-contract position because this is a terminable at will contract. And the parties were very specific in affirming the 0.4 right. They affirmed it expressly in paragraph 7, and then they listed it. They went so far as to list it in this separate attachment, Exhibit C. They listed it along with the appropriative water rights. And then they affirmed it. They said twice in the paragraph that nothing either in the agreement or in the paragraph should constitute a sale or shall terminate or diminish those water rights. So they very expressly affirmed the right, and they did so at a time when they were suspending it. Because if you read paragraph 7, what it says is that in entering into the 1990 agreement, Cascade is subordinating its rights. It cannot exercise its water rights during the life of the agreement. So the agreement is affirming these rights and then saying you can't exercise them during the life of the agreement.
Saying you can't exercise them because we're allowing Colorado Springs to use them.
Yes. Yeah, but why, Your Honor, would you expressly affirm a right that you're suspending unless you were contemplating that after there's a walk away and this agreement that right still remains?
Wouldn't another water appropriator be able to come in and say, hey, they said they're not going to exercise their rights. That means they've abandoned it. And this contract simply says, no, we haven't. We're just allowing someone else to use them.
Arguably, Your Honor, let me return to the number of ways that they expressly list it. They say it won't be sold, terminated, or diminished by this contract. That's in contrast to a part in the agreement where the district does convey a right back to the city. Paragraph 6, it says the city is relieved of the bypass flow obligation. So the city knew what language to use if it wanted to convey back a right. It didn't use that. Instead, it expressly affirmed this.
You mentioned that the parties knew how to use the word. In the force majeure clause, they used the term specifically suspend, whereas in this previous paragraph, they used supersede. Doesn't that cut against your argument?
I don't think so, Your Honor. I mean, I think our primary argument is this one sentence. To rule with the city, you'd have to have this one sentence overturn a half a dozen other provisions in the contract in which this right is expressly affirmed. And a very reasonable reading of that sentence, which can be interpreted more than one way.
Well, it's affirmed, but affirmed for purposes of the agreement. I mean, it's not. It doesn't say we're recognizing that if you default, or if there is a default, or if there is a walk away, you nevertheless retain this right. It's simply saying, or simply determining what's going to happen with this 0.4 CFS under the terms of the agreement.
But it expressly it identifies it as a right created in 1934. That's in Exhibit C. So it identifies it as a right created in the earlier document. It's not being created in the new document. Also, you cannot determine that right without going back to the 1934 agreement. In the 1990 agreement, there may have been an intention to work through only one document, but if you go to the 1990 agreement and read paragraph 7, it just contains a shorthand reference to the 0.4 CFS contractual right. You can't determine what that right is unless you go back to the 1934 contract, which describes it in some detail. And finally here, also, I think the city doesn't want to look at the issue of what would it actually mean to annul and make void the 1934 agreement, because that's what they say the result is. That's an agreement that simply can't be annulled and made void. It's been in place for 75 years, and the North Slope project was created as a result of this agreement. The primary consideration that the Water District gave in the 1934 agreement was to withdraw its protests against the North Slope project. By signing it, the North Slope project was allowed to proceed. That agreement, and it has proceeded, two reservoirs have been built and many miles of pipelines and 75 years of water. It's flowed through there. You can't unwind it and annul and make it void. You can't put the district back in its pre-1934 position.
Why not? I mean, that was a matter for contracting between the contracting parties. Parties could do that if they wanted to. The question is whether the contract does that, not whether the party should have done it.
No, the question is whether the parties intended to annul and make it void through that one sentence. And we would submit that they can't have when you read that agreement. The city is attempting to cherry picking. It's saying we're going to annul. We get back the consideration that we gave in 1934, which is, you know, we're required to give you 0.4 CFS every year. The district can't get back the consideration it gave in 1934. It gave up its objections to the North Slope project. It can't make that project go away. That project has passed into history. So the idea that they were thinking of actually annulling this is not credible, because if you think of what actually annulling it would mean, it doesn't make any sense. So, Your Honor, we think that if you simply put the 1990 agreement in front of you and read it, you will see half a dozen or more provisions that express the intention to affirm this 1934 contract right. And you put against that one sentence in a different part of the provision, which, set against all those sentences, just can't reasonably be interpreted to mean shred this earlier agreement under which everybody has been operating for more than 50 years. And I see my time is almost up. Your Honor, if there are any other questions?
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I'd just like to make three quick points. First, the second paragraph of the 1934 agreement makes clear that no water rights are conveyed. And there's been a consistent misunderstanding here that somehow the 1934 contract created something more than a contractual water right. It did not. Second, the subordination provision in paragraph 7 of the 1990 agreement can only apply to priority water rights, not contract water rights. So the subordination there was simply to make the Cascade Public Service water rights subordinate to the city's water rights during the term of the agreement. Finally, with respect to the 1934 agreement, everything under the 1934 agreement had been performed. The only ongoing obligations were the bypass flow and the contractual delivery of water. Those are contractual water rights and contractual rights that the parties can agree to modify. They agreed to modify them in the 1990 agreement, and they made very clear that the 1990 agreement superseded, that is, took the place of and ended the 1934 agreement. And so if the appellees choose to terminate the 1990 agreement, then there will be no further obligations among the parties that survive. If the court has no further questions, thank you for your time.
Both for your arguments this afternoon. This case will stand submitted. We will get you a written opinion in due course.